Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Wealth with me, Alex Steger, and I'm joined as ever by my co-host and savant, Ian Wenick.
You really put a lot of pressure on me.
Is savant a slur? I said that
Is that nice.
An okay thing to say?
No, it's a compliment. It's just now you're setting me up that if I bomb the format of our episode, that I'm going to have to abandon that title.
It's a title bestowed upon you, so you know it can only be taken away by someone else, and I'll stick with it. But lovely to see you, Ian, as ever. It's not like I don't see you all day, but it's nice to see you in the studio. You know, it's different vibe, more serious, better air conditioning, that kind of thing. So look, this is a special episode, listener, of This Week in Wealth. It's less this week, more this 6 month in wealth, but obviously that doesn't roll off the tongue particularly. Maybe a better name would be the Halftime Show. Right, Ian?
Yeah, I like that. Halftime Report.
Good. So the Halftime Report. And what we're going to do is we're going to take a look back at the last 6 months, look at what some of the biggest stories were, what some of the trends were, whether we predicted this, and what we didn't predict, I suppose. So, Ian, I want to start off, and this is why you're worried about the savant label, because as you know, I'm going to start this off with a little quiz. Quiz time. Ian, looking back at the last 6 months, what do you think were the top red stories on citywire.com/RAA?
All right. First off, I will say that there's no way am I cheating. Okay. I have this turned around. It is just our homepage. I'm not looking at our Looker Studio list. I'm going to say I feel pretty confident the number one overall is going to be LPL Commonwealth Acquisition.
Okay, so incorrect.
Wow.
It is, so I'll tell you this. Of the one, two, three, of the top 10, five of them do relate to the LPL Commonwealth Acquisition. Regular listeners and readers of citywire.com/RAA will know that CityWire, Ian specifically, and Andrew Forsh, not with us today, in this episode, very much still with us in life, broke the story of LPL being in talks to acquire Commonwealth before anything was official. We then broke the story that the deal was imminent, and then obviously we wrote when it was confirmed that the deal had happened, and there's been lots of follow-up since. But the actual story of those two being in talks, or that they agreed to acquire them, comes in at number six.
Wow.
That they held talks. So that was the first that anyone publicly had noted that this was going to be happening. I think, Ian, if you remember, was it a Friday evening, that story? Was it a Thursday morning? It was kind of an odd time.
We broke that they had held talks on a Thursday afternoon, and then we broke on a Friday that the deal was done.
Okay. Well, the talks is the best read story of the... actually, that's not true. The best read story is a sort of a follow-up about the about kind of what's allowed. So in at number four on CityWire was LPL to prohibit Commonwealth advisors from joining OSJs and for affiliates entering sort of recruitment deals with them, if you remember that story. So that kind of came later, which I kind of think speaks to how much fallout there's been from this and how much sort of intense interest there have been around the recruiting efforts of both LPL and obviously all the sort of, let's call them vultures for the sake of this podcast, because it's fun and we can kind of be a bit more out there than we would otherwise be. But yeah, the actual story itself not in at number one. So would you care to guess the number one? Have another go. I don't think you'll get it. Not because... it's not a big story, but because it's sort of a one-off story.
Hmm. Is it the advisor who got to play in the Masters?
No, that is in there, though. That is number three. The story of the CEO of a $2.5 billion RAA who got to play in the Masters tournament as a marker. I can't fully remember this story. Do you remember who he was and what a marker is?
Yes, he was I forget his name off the top of my head, but I believe he's the CEO of Cathmere Capital Management. I might have that wrong. And I know he played golf for St. Joseph University. He was in the Philly area. And he got to play as a marker. And what a marker is if you're competing in the Masters and you have an odd number of people who make the cut, you have a member of Augusta National play as an amateur so that
Michael McDermott was his name, yes, by the way. But yes.
Was I right about the RAA?
You were. Kathmir Capital. There you go. You're still a savant. Okay. Yes. So that was number three. So I'm going to give you a clue now to see if you can get number one. My clue is it involves a custodian.
Oh, it's probably the Charles Schwab raising fees for referrals.
Correct. Yeah. Quick recap. That's from February. Again, an exclusive from CityWire, from Ian Wenick, probably.
Yeah, I broke that one.
And what was the gist of it? It was basically if you were part of that referral network, they were going to take slightly more basis points, yes, than they'd previously, exactly, taken from you. Yeah,
I believe that it translated to about a 5% increase, which I think translated to one basis point, which on an individual client basis probably doesn't mean a whole lot. But again, sounded like Moneyball. In the aggregate, that adds up to a whole lot.
Yeah, a whole lot. More for Schwab and a slightly less appealing proposition for people in that network, although no one's going to leave that network because it's just too goddamn good to be in. And I think, as we know at the time, they hadn't changed the fee arrangement for quite some time. So
yes, it'd been a long time.
Not that it's our job to defend their moves, but perhaps if one was going to, you could say, well, hey, you know, prices hadn't moved much for a while. Okay, so we're gonna end the quiz in a second. Last one. Any idea what number two might be?
I'm going to say that it was Andrew's scoop on the SEC offering buyouts to its staff members.
Ooh, is that even on the list? So it's not that.
Wow, I'm surprised by that too.
That is.
Is it a deal story?
No, it's a special report that CityWire did.
Oh, it's the pay report.
It's the pay report. Yeah, there you go. So I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but yeah, fantastic piece of work surveying 100 plus RIAs and employees of RIAs about their compensation, both how much they get paid, how much of that's in salary versus variable compensation, how much equity they have in their firm, how that equity gets decided. And yeah, really detailed report. Also, there was a sort of follow-up report off the back of that same survey all around kind of their work from home habits. Guess what? Younger people have to go in more than older people. But really great piece of work.
Yes, I was really impressed by the legwork that went in both on the data team, us working together to compile those questions. Andrew did a great job synthesizing that data. And we got a lot of follow-up stories off that too, which I was very impressed by.
Yeah, no, excellent. So that's pretty much, those are some of the bigger stories, I guess. Last question for you. Other than LPL and Commonwealth, which deal story you are, if I had to give you another title, as well as some, I would maybe call you a deal czar, you know, in terms of your knowledge and reach in that particular space. What deal story do you think was the best read of the first 6 months this year? Do you want a clue or do you want to go without a clue first?
Let me go without the clue first. And then if I'm wrong, give me a clue.
Okay.
I think just by scale and just in terms of a process that started this year, I'm going to say Sageview.
So negative on Sageview, I'm afraid. Do you want the clue?
All right. Give me the hint.
And I think this is what's, helped push it higher. There's a sort of, there's a sports or celebrity element to it.
Celebrity element.
Do you know what I've done you? I've done you up badly here. It's not actually a deal.
It's not actually a deal.
Someone pursuing a deal rather than a deal closing itself.
Oh, this is Justin Ishbia, the Shore Capital, the Phoenix Suns co-owner, who is now, I believe, going to buy the Chicago. He has an option to buy the Chicago White Sox, and we broke that he was pursuing an REA deal. And funnily enough, his private equity firm, Shore Capital Partners, I believe literally today, just raised about $1.9 billion for a new fund.
Well, there you go. You are right. I'm sorry. I think that was an unfair question because the deal didn't actually close. If you're interested, both Ian and listeners, the Edelman deal, which you reported on just this week, has already climbed, I suppose, in terms of, again, it's not actually a deal, is it? What about a deal that closed? Well, other highlights deal-wise, obviously the Edelman story that is looking to possibly sell to a strategic acquirer. Your brilliant scoop, Ian, that Blackstone is weighing up an RA deal in its tactical opportunities unit. That did really well. Actual deal that closed? You know what? People don't care about closed deals. They want to know when people are raising money or looking to sell. That's the money shot.
They
want to
know if they should bid.
Yeah, exactly. Among other things. Excellent. Do you think we've rinsed that quiz dry?
Yes, I think we've gotten out of that. But you know, I have a quiz for you.
Okay, tables have turned. Am I going to like this?
All right. First question: who was the first ever draft pick in the inaugural MLB draft in 1965?
Okay,
well, he made two All-Star teams.
You know that I know nothing about American sport. I'm just not even going to try.
I set you up to fail with that one. Okay. That was Rick Monday.
Ah, tip of my tongue.
1981 World Series champion of the Dodgers.
If you give me a clue, I'm sure I got it.
No, but my actual quiz for you is in January, in this very studio with you and I sit in this exact same spot, me, you, and Sam Bojarski. I'm gesturing at an empty chair that was filled by Sam that day. We discussed...
We keep all our chairs empty when the guests aren't here to sort of remember them. It's a strange ritual.
We collectively discussed four core themes that we each individually thought were going to be some of the dominant stories in the RA industry this year. I want to see how many of those you can name off the top of your head, and then we'll see which ones we got right and which ones we got wrong.
Okay, so clearly, listener, I don't remember what we said, and I have not listened back to it because I didn't know this was coming. All right, so four predictions. So the three of us made four predictions.
Yes.
Collectively. Did I have one myself that I sort of made?
Or you kind of piggybacked off Sam and myself.
Okay, all right. So you guys did the leg. Okay, that's fine. That makes me feel less bad about not remembering, to be honest. All right, so... Something about God. This is difficult. Oh man, this is. I would argue this is harder than yours. All right, deal flow. We would have talked about it. What would we have said? We would have said would remain consistent. Maybe a minor slowdown. That might feel right to me. You know, would come off the back of 2 years of very buoyant markets. Perhaps we sort of thought those things had. Oh, okay. I'm riffing. This is jazz. Here's where I'm going to get to. More sovereign deals. Would we have talked about the possibility of more sovereign wealth funds? If I look back, maybe there had been one back then. Possibly the Fisher deal had already happened and we were like, look, that could be the first of not many, but a few. And has that come true? We'll come back to that in a minute. But yes, was that one?
That was one. That is 100% correct. I didn't know if you were going to get there. But yes, we discussed the possibility of more sovereign investment based off the Mubadala Capital deal to buy CI Financial, the parent of Corient, and the Ken Fisher deal with ADIA.
Okay, so those have both happened at the time.
Yes.
Have we seen more since?
We have not yet, and I think the reason we haven't gotten there, so this is an 0-for-1 on predictions, but it's an incomplete, actually, not an 0-for-1.
Well, no, because, yeah, we predicted for the year. We didn't predict these would happen in the first 6 months. So I think we'll give ourselves a sort of, we're still good here.
Yeah.
Okay, so have we heard rumors of more? Oh, well, what about the Mercer deal that sort of, had that already happened?
Yeah, but that had already happened. I think that...
Reported it this year, didn't we?
We did. So I think the reason that we haven't gotten there yet this year is because there aren't a lot of firms that are of the scale that it would make sense for a sovereign to commit the kind of permanent capital. Now, I think the possibility would be, and then this is your favorite idle speculation, would be Edelman.
I like hearsay as well, just to be clear. That's a kind of evidence, right? Who's doing the Simpsons references now?
I'm not wearing a tie at all. Anyway, Edelman makes sense with 275 or so billion in assets, similar-ish to Fisher. Obviously, some of that is retirement, 401k account management. That's a firm that could make sense as a sovereign buyer. Now, the cold water I'll pour on that is that we reported that Edelman is prioritizing finding a sale to a strategic acquirer. The problem with that is that there's a very small universe of firms that can cut that check. You have basically Creative Planning and Peter Malouk, which I think would be a massive check even for Peter to cut. And then you have the mega banks. And I think what we saw with the Goldman Sachs Capital deal is that a lot of advisors have no interest in working for a bank.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so hasn't happened, but I don't think we get a zero for that. And I certainly get 1 point here for just about getting there in the end. Okay, so three more predictions to guess?
We got three more.
All right. Well, if Sam was on, I imagine there'd been something about regulation. So this is kind of cheating because I'm going on who was on. What would we have said? So we recorded in early January before the current administration took office, but obviously we knew that was coming down the pike. So I am assuming that if I'm giving us any credit here at all, we would have suggested obviously a big change in regulation, and we would have seen, you know, the cutting of red tape to some degree, you know, the de-emphasizing of some of the rules that have been put forward by a very busy SEC under former chair Gary Gensler, and we would have said we'll see some of that reduced.
You are correct.
Okay.
You are correct. And we described it on the first episode as a less heavy-handed approach to regulation. And that has come true. I mean, the SEC has withdrawn numerous proposals that touch on RIAs that were priorities of Gary Gensler. I believe that they are pulling, I think they pulled back on, it might have been the AI rule. They pulled back, I think, at least 12 proposals relatively recently. This is where
Sam was it 14? 12 or 14 proposals? But yeah, the number, not all of them touched on RIAs. But yeah, we do know they've withdrawn a lot. And the public pronouncements from Atkins and, of course, our old friend Hester Peirce have been very much around, you know.
And you are correct.
We don't need to do more here.
It is 14. It included the AI rule, the custody rule, the cybersecurity rule, and the non-clerical outsourcing rule. So yes, you are 2 for 2 so far.
2 for 2, but I'll be honest, I've played, I think, pretty much all the cards that I had here. So at this point, we're into pure guesswork. Can I ask for a slight clue? Were they specific? Were they about a specific story, or were they sort of broader, trendy type predictions?
So one was a broader trend that was kind of adjacent to some of the deal stuff. And the second was not tied to one specific story, but to one specific series of stories that we covered off really strongly in 2024.
Okay. All right. So tied to the deals, we've talked about this a bit on the pod before. So is it about that kind of PE 2.0 or sort of RIA 2.0 type idea that we often discuss both on the pod and, believe it or not, when we talk in real life sometimes, not for posterity. So yeah, maybe the sort of the we'll see a few more founders step away. We'll see sort of PE firms make some hard-nosed decisions, shall we say, about their businesses, which could involve, you know, I guess, for want of a better phrase, you know, not playing nice anymore, kind of, you know, taking charge of their firms, whether they're pushing out the founder is maybe sort of quite a subjective take on it, but certainly founders going, PE firms taking charge, driving more efficiencies in their business, maybe smashing a few more businesses together, etc.
You are correct. And this has happened to an extent this year. I mean, the two stories that come to mind first are one, Bob Oros from Hightower, not a founder, but did a lot with Thomas H. Lee Partners first came in. He chose to step back. Hightower hired Larry Rustieri, formerly of Goldman Sachs, ACO/ICO, as the replacing chief executive. That transition just happened. So there's one. And then literally just today, we wrote about at Corio, which is backed by Parthenon Capital Partners. Parthenon bought that a couple years ago. The inaugural CEO of that lift out business, Larry Miles, he has transitioned into a new role managing partnerships, and they just hired Jason Vandeleu, formerly of Edelman Financial Engines, to serve as the new chief executive. So there's two right there.
Yeah, we did a whole podcast on this, didn't we? Not that long ago around this trend. I think the other firm that we talked about, which admittedly is not an RAA, but it's RAA, Jason was Orion, where there was literally the founder was not pushed out by any stretch of the imagination, but moved off the board and numerous changes there.
Yes, exactly.
With their PE backers obviously kind of, you know, flexing their muscles, shall we say. So we think, not only did I guess that correctly, which is the most important thing here, but more importantly, we're sort of on for that one. We're seeing that trend happen.
We are 2 + incomplete out of 3 so far.
Okay. All right. Pretty impressive, listener. Pretty impressive. Okay. So the final prediction that I have to guess, you're going to have to give me a clue because I can't think.
Okay. We wrote about stories involving this theme and LPL, Morgan Stanley, several other large firms.
Dead air. I'm just going to fill dead air here. No, I've got nothing. Put me out of my misery.
Cash sweep.
Sam said,
keep an eye on cash sweep. And this has been correct, but not in the way that we expected, in that it's been much less of a story. I mean, I mentioned Morgan Stanley at the SEC this year. We did write about this. Ultimately chose to close its cash sweep investigation into Morgan Stanley with no action. And then just coming out in the email on Tuesday, we wrote about how a lot of the lawsuits filed against LPL, which was the genesis for a lot of this coverage industry-wide, those have been partially dismissed.
Wow, interesting. Yeah, that's such a good point. It was such a big story in 2024, wasn't it? And I suppose you're right, like worth keeping an eye on. But we, if we're being honest, would have meant that by like fines are coming, settlements are due, you know, bills will be paid. This is sort of a scandal which will have its sort of its moment in the sun. But actually, yeah, the reality is whether that's because of the aforementioned change in administration or whether it's because, you know, there wasn't merit in these cases. Okay, very interesting. Yeah, such a big story last year and just hasn't been one this year, has it?
You're technically correct, which is the best kind of correct.
Yeah, technically, right? Okay, well, that's really interesting. As it's the end of the quiz, I'm going to turn the questions back to you for a moment then. What did we not... I mean, obviously, we weren't trying to predict everything that would happen, but what did we not predict that has happened this year? Sort of how would you... What other kind of big trends or topics do you think have dominated the news flow and the RIA industry as a whole, but which we didn't see coming or didn't think were worth mentioning in January?
I would say not necessarily that we missed it, but maybe that we undercovered it. And maybe this is just because I have my head down chasing deal stuff. But I was very surprised to see the level of engagement we got on the story I wrote this week on Rick Edelman advocating for advisors to allocate up to 10% to 40% of a client's portfolio to cryptocurrency. And it's funny because I just think that maybe we underappreciate or didn't 100% notice just how normalized working with this asset class has become in the industry. That, I think, stands out as one option.
That's a very good point, isn't it? I suppose it was in the spring of 24 that those Bitcoin, that sort of first wave of Bitcoin ETFs were approved by the SEC. I don't have it to hand, but the BlackRock one is, I believe, upwards of $40 billion already. You know, they've taken in a lot of money, you're right. That was maybe step one's the wrong word, but certainly a key moment in that asset class becoming more easily available to the wealth management industry. So it's interesting to see. Obviously, as we know, interest more broadly in crypto has been huge and going on for some time, and obviously the price appreciation of things like Bitcoin during that time has only helped its enthusiasm for it, let's say. Yeah, that's a really interesting one. Yeah, any others?
Let me think. So we talked about some of the crypto stuff. I think that's interesting. I think, and this is kind of goes part and parcel with some of the LPL Commonwealth stuff, I think that, and thankfully the pay report helped cover some of this gap, I think that we could do a better job covering how advisors get paid and how that radiates down to people in the middle to bottom tiers of the organization. I think that happens sometimes when we're writing about, you know, some of the palace intrigue or executive changes, but, you know, things like when UBS changed the payout grid and at the end of 2024 for their wirehouse advisors. I mean, that led to a flood of advisors choosing to leave. And so I think that that's something that we could be across more, because the second and third order effects of that touch not only IBDs, but RIAs themselves.
Yeah, that's interesting. It probably is something that because of that LPL Commonwealth deal, there's been more focus on what advisors, you know, whether it's the signing on sort of loan, forgivable loan structure sort of looks like, or overall package looks like. And there's been a lot of coverage on that. That's very true. I suppose that kind of coverage has often sat in the wirehouse world, hasn't it, a bit more. But obviously what happens there, you know, impacts everything. Okay, well, I'm not going to sort of push you for any other sort of big things that have happened this year. I mean, I think the only other thing to add is obviously markets have been pretty interesting. You know, we had that a wild week in the immediate aftermath of the tariffs being announced, in which things were sort of moving up and down on pronouncements and rumors and back again. And
Walter Bloomberg.
Yeah, the false tweet about talks, which everything rallied on. I think that was one of the few times I remember writing or editing a market report, and by the time it was ready to go, it was completely incorrect, you know, which is a fun way to spend 40 minutes of your life. Okay, well, look, let's end with, this is slightly unfairian, but as I'm asking it, you have to answer it first. Let's end with one final prediction then. So we were pretty good. We were pretty good with our 3 out of 4 for the first 6 months of the year. Is there something that you can think of that, you know, we didn't think of in January, but, you know, people should watch out for between now and the end of 2025?
I think that we'll see, if not one, I think honestly probably multiple mega deals between strategics before the end of the year. And, you know, that may not necessarily be Edelman. I think that that's possible. But I think that we'll see several firms in the tens of billions in assets choose to combine as opposed to selling to a financial sponsor or to permanent capital like an insurance firm or a bank or a sovereign wealth fund.
All right. Well, look, fantastic. Ian, thank you for taking part in the quiz. Thank you for quizzing me. Listener, thank you for listening for these last 6 months. It's been a pleasure doing this. Enjoy the summer. We're not going anywhere. Don't worry. Just enjoy your summer. And we'll be back again very soon for another week in wealth.